began so long ago with a band of Queen's Park men.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the very first podcast regarding Queen's Park Football Club. This is the Spiders Talk podcast. My name is David Blair. I am joined with two good friends, Enzo Tamaniri. Hopefully I did get that right, didn't I, Enzo?
Close enough, yeah.
I mean, it has been a long time that we've known each other, but it's still good to know that I get that right. And Callum Stewart.
Yep, my name's a wee bit easier to pronounce.
a little bit, thankfully. we are going to give our thoughts on Queen's Park. We've been talking about doing a podcast on our team for quite a long time now. And, well, given the fact that we're continuing this meteoric rise up through the leagues, we thought there's no time like the present to finally give it a shot. So there is obviously a lot that we can talk about on Queen's Park. Let's just talk about the meteoric rise over the last 2 years since we turned professional back in November 2020. We've obviously had the COVID hit League Two title season, and we obviously had last season where we won the League One playoffs quite spectacularly. I think we could do an episode on that game alone.
I think we could do an episode on the night out after that game alone, to be honest. No. Never mind. No, I'm just the game, but I think we'll skip that.
Yeah, we're going to try and keep it PG as best as possible, so we're going to have to skip that episode, at least for now. Maybe once we've got an established fan base, we can take it from there, if we get an established fan base. But, so what we're going to do today is we're going to just talk about the beginning of the 22-23 season. So we're going to have a look at the pre-season so far. We're going to have a look at the transfer window. And seeing as we've had a couple of games in the Premier Sports Cup group stage, we're going to have a look back at them as well. So we're going to start. Dive straight in. We're going to look at the transfer window to date. So with Queen's Park this season, we have not maybe signed as many players as I think a lot of the fans would have expected to so far. We're obviously only mid-July. There's still going to be another 6 weeks or so of the window to go. We've had quite a lot of names going out, but and a lot of names that have came up through the leagues with us. There's some big names there as well. I'm going to touch on the players that have left last season, first of all, and what we're each going to do. We're going to each pick a player that we want to particularly single out for their contribution, whether it was good, whether it was bad, and just say a particular word on them. So, first things first, the players that left. So, we had five loanees last season in that have all returned to their parent clubs. We had Luke O'Connell from Celtic. We had Connor Smith from Hearts. We had Louis Longstaff from Liverpool. We also had, that came in January, we had Ronan Darcy from Bolton and Connor McBride from Blackburn. I would say personally, I'm a bit disappointed that Connor Smith actually went back to Hearts. I know that he was offered a contract with Queens. He's obviously taken his chance to go and get a shot at Hearts, and fair play to him. Luke O'Connell is definitely a talented player. Would have loved to have kept him, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think we could afford his wages, even in the Championship. Do I really remember who it was that he's now gone and signed for?
Yeah, he signed for Barnsley, who I believe have actually just been relegated to the English League One. But I suspect you're right when you mention, you know, the fact that we probably realistically couldn't afford his wages. I did a bit of research out of curiosity, because there was this rumour that Connell was apparently earning about £5,000 a week at Celtic now. It is just speculation, but for a young guy like that, signed from a club like Bolton Wanderers at the time, it sounds about right to me. It sounds as though it could be fairly accurate, and that seems to be sort of in the wheelhouse of what you'd expect him to be getting paid down at Barnsley. So, yeah, fair enough. I mean, I was a big fan of Connell. I think with someone like Coyle to motivate him, he could have been a fantastic player for us, even better than what he was. But I don't think he's worth breaking the bank for. Do you know what I mean? I would have had him back in heartbeat within the kind of wage structure, you know, within the wages that we would be expecting to pay players. The upper end of that, definitely, but nothing outrageous. And I think all we can say is, you know, thank him for his time. He was an excellent player, so scored some great goals, contributed a lot, and I'm sure we all wish him the best in Barnsley.
Yeah, absolutely. And as well, I mean, obviously touching on Luke O'Connell saying we'd have taken him back in a heartbeat. I mean, I know I personally, I would have taken Connor Smith back in a heartbeat. I was really hoping that he would have taken the contract with us. But as I say, he's chosen to take his chance at Hearts. He's obviously potentially going to, you know, have a shot at Europe with Hearts if he does well this pre-season. Again, you can't really begrudge him that, can you?
Well, that's what we've been discussing, isn't it? Because I think it's what Hearts, they need to have a bigger squad list this year, so he's got an actual opportunity now to get in amongst that. So it'll be interesting to see if he can take it, because he's clearly got the talent. I always thought it was a bit interesting, though, because we played him out in the wing a lot last season, and I've just never thought that that was his position. I always thought him behind the striker.
He was definitely much better through the middle, wasn't he?
Aye, because you've got him in behind the striker. But I think when he signed back with Hearts, and I watched the interview that he'd done, and he was very much saying that I want to be a centre mid, like that's where I am. So I'd imagine he'll have a lot of competition, especially at a club like Hearts. So I could see him going back out on loan somewhere.
Never know, we might well be back in for him before the end of the window. And
well, you would think, I would agree with that. I think if he is going to be going back out on loan anywhere, realistically, it would be a Championship club, and we're better than us. Where he knows people, he knows the fans, he knows the squad and even the manager, so it would make sense. I think you're right in saying Hearts do need to have a bigger squad this season now, because obviously, with them being guaranteed group stage football as well in Europe, whether it's the Europa League or the Conference League, I think they need to have 23 players registered. I'm not 100% sure on that number, but it's something like 23. And if that's the case, then it's going to be a brilliant opportunity for them to even just be travelling with the squad two games like that, potentially playing some decent, even if he's not getting many first team minutes in Europe. It's going to be an excellent experience, and I'm sure he'll learn a lot. The only thing I would say, and I would love to see him get a chance to play for Hearts, because I think he is capable of playing at that level. The only thing I would say is that I found it quite interesting that Hearts only gave him a one-year contract, because that suggests to me that they don't have massive amounts of faith in him. But I suppose we'll see that. That can easily be extended if he does prove himself to be, to be the player that they're looking for and that they're hoping that he'll be.
Absolutely. You've got to assume that it's one of these kind of deals where it is come and prove it. And if he does take that chance, there's going to be a clause in there that they can extend it, whether it's another year or 2 years, whatever. Good luck to all of them, to be honest. All the loanees that have left. We have also had a number of players that the contracts expired and they were not renewed at the club. So out of those, we had Willie Muir, we had Michael Doyle, we had Peter Grant, Stuart Morrison, Darren Lyon, Grant Gillespie, Jai Katongo, Bob McHugh, and Will Bainham. So there's quite a number of players, and quite a few of them have actually signed with other Championship clubs. So we're going to come against them this season.
I think other than Bainham and Darren Lyon, all of those players have found new clubs, whether it's in the Championship or elsewhere. They've all signed new contracts at other teams. So
Before we come on and talk about, we're each going to pick one of those players and talk about them a little bit more. You've obviously just mentioned Will Bainham there, Enzo. I think we kind of have to put on record that I think we all hope that whatever Will Bainham went through last season, he recovers fully from it. It appears it was never really properly confirmed by the club, but it appears that he suffered two concussions back in like July and August in the pre-season of 2021.
Yeah.
And he never recovered. He was rarely seen in like training photo updates by the club. It was kept very quiet. Obviously, it seems like it was a very serious situation. I mean, you can't mess about with head knocks. You can't mess about with concussions, and apparently getting two in the space of a week, it could have been really dangerous. So whatever he ends up doing, certainly hope that he's able to keep playing. And even if he's not, he's able to keep going and enjoying whatever he does.
Yeah, Bainham was an interesting one, because I don't think we really saw at any point what he's capable of. I do remember the League Two Championship season. He played, I think he played with, I can't remember, was it when we played Albion Rovers? We scored a couple of early goals. He scored two goals in that game, and he looked quite promising that day. But then beyond that, he never really got a fair crack, I don't think, even before his injury.
I'd agree with that. He didn't really get what you would really say was a good run in the team. Yeah. But then I personally always remember the Edinburgh City game. It wasn't the game that we actually won the title, but really it was the game where we won the title, the 3-2 game through there, where him and Simon Murray, I believe Simon Murray came off the bench, but certainly Will Bainham came off the bench, and the two of them linked up for two goals in the second half.
That's
turned
right.
it around from 2-1 down to 3-2. That was the game where we then knew that we just had to see out the season under... under Ray McKinnon and Ray Ball, which we may well come talk about in a future episode.
Feels so long ago, doesn't it? My goodness, it's like a different world reflecting back on that now.
How far we've come already.
When you think about it, it's quite incredible. I mean, I think we scored more goals against Utrecht, and I know that's something else that we'll come on to, but we scored more goals against Utrecht than what we ever managed in any game under McKinnon, if I'm right in saying. I don't think we ever scored more than three goals. And there were some games where we really did cut it fine, despite the fact that, you know, despite the fact that we were clearly better than every single team in that division. I felt as though quite often McKinnon's tactics came down to be fitter than them, and eventually you will put the ball in the back of the net. I remember one of the games down in Stranraer that season where I think we won 1-0, and I think it was a late goal as well, and that was pretty much the epitome of, you know, you will score as long as you're fitter than them. And to be fair, it did work out for him, but I feel as though, yeah, I think things could have gotten a little bit more interesting in that division with that tactic if there had been a Kelty Hearts or a whoever else in it in the same season as us.
That sort of approach is going to have a bit of a shelf life to it as well, isn't it? I can't imagine had we went into League One with that similar sort of mindset. Well, to be fair, League One was...
Some would say we did.
Wasn't exactly the easiest of affairs either, was it, to be fair? It's good. It's nice to watch the pre-season games and see such a difference in how we're approaching the games. I'd much rather go out and score several goals and maybe concede one or two than scrape through on... How many 1-1s did we have last season?
Oh, 15 or 16, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was almost a 50%. Was it more than 50%? It wasn't. But it was
very close if it wasn't over.
Yeah.
I know. It got to that stage where I almost wanted to get to 50%, just for the record.
Yeah. So maybe that contributed to a lot of these players going out. Obviously, we've got some new players coming in, some new faces as well. But let's take a moment just to talk about one of these players each. I'm going to come to you first, Enzo. Out of that list of players that have left the club, who would you like to pay homage, or who would you like to drop right in it? Who would you like to talk about?
I'm not going to drop anyone in it because the player I'd like to talk about is Willie Muir. And I'm sure, you know, we all have lots to say on the goalkeeper situation. We all have, you know, it was a point of discussion regularly last season, I think, you know, whether Muir or Ferry should be the starter, who is the better keeper between them. Let me ask you two, do you think it was the right decision to release Willie Muir?
I think it was a very tough decision, but I do think that it is the right decision to release Willie Muir. But I'm not necessarily convinced that our goalkeeping situation right now is where we would want it to be going into the championship.
So, yeah, I think to release him without maybe having somebody ready made to line, and obviously we do have young Jacques Herity in the wings that maybe the club think that he's good enough to be the number two. But maybe for us right now, maybe the fans, maybe we kind of think, well, you'd maybe want somebody a bit more established to be a number two.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the game that Herity did play last season, he was very, you know, for such a young guy,
absolutely.
He was very, very commanding. That was the game. It was actually Laurie Ellis's last game, I think. We lost 1-0 through an airdrake here. McInroy scored that cracking goal. Callum and I were at that game, even though it was supposed to be home fans only. We sneaked onto their website and bought a couple of tickets for it. but you know, we could hear at the game. He was loud. He was a leader on the park, and for a guy of that age. And, you know, with very little experience, it was very impressive. Coming back to Muir, what I would say is that I agree with what you're saying, Callum. I agree that the goalkeeping situation right now probably isn't where we would like it to be going into a championship season. So I like Ferry. I think Ferry's a good goalkeeper. I think he's good at certain things. I think he's a brilliant shot stopper. I do think there's certain things that he needs to get better at. His distribution, his kicking are not good. I'm sure he himself is probably working on that in training every day. I'm sure he understands that it's something that needs to get better. However, if we're going into the season without another keeper coming in, whether it's, you know, someone to take the, you know, that first choice goalkeeping spot straight away, which I suspect isn't going to happen now that Ferry's been given the number one jersey. If that's not going to happen, then I would have liked to have kept Muir as backup for competition, however you want to look at it. Okay. If we are going to be signing a goalkeeper, and it wouldn't surprise me if we did, because like you were saying earlier on, David, you know, there's still 2.5 weeks until even the first league game. There's still even longer than that to bring new faces in. If we are going to be bringing in a new keeper, then I am comfortable with Muir leaving. Now, Muir is a legend, right? 170 appearances for the club. I think he's the only player to ever have been a part of three different promotions. And that's incredible. And that's something that no Queens fans are ever going to forget. I believe personally that Muir's ceiling is a good League One goalkeeper. I don't know if he's got it in him to improve anymore. I think Ferry's a younger. I think Ferry could potentially get better. And I think Ferry could be good enough to be a championship level goalkeeper. And what you have to consider is, you know, like I said there, I touched on the age thing. Does Muir want to go into the championship as a backup? Like, does he not maybe at his age want to be playing football? You know, obviously he's just signed for Alloa. Is that maybe not better for him at this point in his career to keep playing where he's obviously going to be challenging for that, you know, for that number one jersey? I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can't see him wanting to have been the backup going into the championship. I mean, I think for a few of us that had a chance to speak to him at the end of the season, after the Airdrie game, I think even though obviously everybody was still delighted, but I think you could still tell that he was a little bit, you know, I don't know, maybe he felt like it wasn't him that helped get us up, even though he played the first 2 months of the season or so. He was a bit, of course he was. No, of course he was, but I'm just saying, did he maybe feel disappointed that he wasn't the first choice goalkeeper? And that's it, as you're saying, Enzo, he wants, I mean, it happened before where he obviously moved on from Queen's Park when we were amateur. He then wasn't getting the football and he came back and then he came right back in and he was that good. He steals a number one jersey off of whoever was here at the time.
Yeah.
That didn't happen this time. And is it then in his head where he's like, well, I want to be playing football? Was it his decision to move on rather than us letting him go?
I wonder, I'm just thinking about the goalkeeping situation in general, and I wonder if there's part of this where we need to start to readjust our expectations of what depth looks like in our squad. Because obviously, like, when we went to the sort of off-season started and we had the initial batch of signings were mostly all the sort of young kids, and we know that the club's moving in that direction. Maybe having the likes of Hegarty as your backup, that is the plan. That is the intention, to have these guys come through so that when they do get a chance, they're going to make that step up and they're going to have opportunities for it. Because I wonder about positions like, so for the most of last season, we didn't have any sort of recognised backup for Robson. And then was it Bruce that stepped in?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Back. I wonder if the intention is just for Robson's backup this season to have it as Bruce. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to bringing in guys that are maybe in their sort of mid to late 20s that are going to be behind them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's definitely going to be a big part of the team and a big part of the club going forward, obviously, under the director of football, Marion Booker. You know, that's clearly that he wants to be promoting youth. And I mean, we've seen that where we come on to talking about the players that have been retained at the club. There's also a number of young players that have signed these apprentice contracts. And actually, Cammy Bruce is one that's actually signed a professional contract. So that is perhaps an indication that you're right there, Callum, that he actually could well be the number two. He could well be the backup left-back going forward. I
mean, you just need to look at the bench over the past couple of games. Now, I know that the Premier Sports Cup is essentially an extension of the pre-season. I know that people always say that, you know, they're to be treated almost as friendly matches. It's an opportunity to try new things. But you look at the amount of youth on the bench over the past couple of games and you'll see that, it's pretty obvious that there has been a shift towards that. And I think it's something that, as a club, we have to get good at. You know, we have to be developing these young guys, giving them their opportunity, and then ultimately, you know, potentially even looking to sell them on.
Yeah, I mean, that as far as I'm aware, is the plan. And let's be frank, these guys that we signed on to the youth setup, we wouldn't have kept them before. We'd maybe be having a couple that would be pushing into the first team, but they might have had their half a season of doing well and then they would have been off again. So, no, it'll be exciting to see how that pans out, and it'll definitely be a different approach. But I'll let you wind back around to Muir, Enzo.
Yeah, that's fine. No, listen, I don't really have too much to add, to be honest with you, other than, you know, I'm sure all of us wish him all the best at Alloa. I hope he smashes it there. I hope his injury isn't too bad. I know that obviously he had a bit of a scare in the friendly match last week when we played them through at Rex Park, and fingers crossed he's doing better now.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Let's go on to you then, Callum. Let's hear who you want to talk about.
I want to talk about Jai Katongo.
Okay. So,
started his senior career with Morton, then to Thistle, right? So I've done my best Wikipedia effort here, then to Partick Thistle, and then he was off to Iran, where he played 8 games of his 4-year contract. Son of Jose Katongo, and obviously ended up with Queens after spells elsewhere. So I thought that Jai was an excellent footballer who slightly underdelivered. Maybe that was down to attitude. Maybe that was down to the injuries. I'm not too sure. But my main question for us today is, would you rather have him as a backup than some of our current wingers?
It's an interesting question. Well, I think that the trouble with Katongo, and it's obviously no fault of his own, but he struggled so badly with injuries, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And you know, you don't even know whether you're going to get half a season out of him off the bench. And he is very effective, to be fair, Callum, like you were saying, like, having him as an option, you know, as a backup option compared to the wingers that we've got at the minute. He has proven himself to be very effective off the bench. He can come on and can change a game, you know, with his pace and his strength. And he does add a lot when he's on form and when he's fit. Would I have him over who we've got right now? Probably. I could see a place for him on that bench, but I also think that we'll be looking to add one or two wingers over the next couple of weeks. So, you know, once the squad is complete, I think my answer to that might be quite different.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you mentioned before, you know, where is his position in this team at, you know, at this moment in time? I like Jai Katongo. When, as you say, Enzo, with his pace and his strength, especially coming off the bench, you know, when he's coming up against fullbacks that are 60, 70 minutes into a game, to come up against Jai Katongo is probably the last thing that these guys want to see. But yeah, you've got the same balance. I think that decision was made with a couple other players in the team, unfortunately. You've got to balance how good and how effective they're going to be versus how much you're actually going to get out of them in a season. Yeah. And when you're weighing that up, unfortunately for Jai, I think it just fell on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Katongo's effectiveness off the bench might actually be, obviously in League One, most of the time, obviously League Two too, but in League One, you're generally playing against part-time players who come 70, 75 minutes, are tiring quite a bit, whereas now in the Championship, we're playing against full-time clubs, obviously you've got Arbroath and Cove, we're playing against full-time clubs, the players are fitter, they're stronger, maybe he wouldn't quite have the same impact here.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, like, so Simon Murray in the playoffs last season, you could argue won himself a contract with the way that he...
Oh, 100% did.
Like, in those playoff games, he he was the driving force behind a lot of those victories. And if I remember correctly, Jai had quite a lot of game time at the tail end of the season, and I don't think he quite made the most of it.
Didn't he he started the second leg in Airdrie, didn't he? Or am I...
Aye.
I'm just remembering
the tail end.
He did come off the bench, though, didn't he?
Aye, he had quite a few games at the tail end of the season. Yeah. He just didn't really get going with it.
Yeah, that's right.
And you wonder if he had that sort of burst in the same way that Simon Murray did, whether it might be a bit of a different story with him. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how he does at Morton. I know that we all seen his start.
It was totally out of control.
His kit.
I was amazed to see some people on Twitter trying to defend that, but that to me was an out of control straight red card all day. I don't think there's any. For a forward to be running back and making reckless challenges like that is just it beggars belief. There's no explanation for it. So yeah,
was that actual pre-season or was that the Premier Sports Cup?
No, it was against Falkirk, I think, wasn't it? And I think it was.
Was that not just the Premier Sports Cup? Just like there,
It was when we were down in Stranraer. Yeah, it was the same day we played Stranraer.
It was.
Yeah.
So the final question for you is on Katongo. Then, what Katongo do you think we'll come up against when we play Morton four times a season?
When?
Will it be red card in the first half, Katongo, or will it be two goals and an assist from the wing, Katongo?
He's so enticing as a player to sign because you just don't know. Like, you kind of look at him and you think he could absolutely tear a team apart, or he might do very little. I was surprised,
actually, to see Katongo sign for Morton. And it's not because I don't think he is capable of playing at this level. I'm not sure about that. It's because I thought that he might have looked into, you know, he might have been considering going part-time, given all of his injury problems. Maybe, you know, less intense training might be beneficial for him. I don't really know.
Do you know how old he is?
He's quite young considering his
club history. 24.
Yeah.
It's a shame. I mean, you hate to see that. You know, a young guy like that, his career's just been totally plagued with injuries. To answer your question, David, d- depending on when we play Morton, I have a feeling we might not come up against Jaika Tonga at all, because he could end up being, you know, he could be cropped again by then.
Yeah, that's very true. That is very true. Well, I'm going to come on to the player that I want to talk about from last season, and well, from the last two seasons, and it's Bingo Bob McHugh, who I think when he joined us back when we were in League Two, and obviously that first full season when we turned professional, and he came along obviously with Ray McKinnon, and he came with the tagline of Morton's top goal scorer from last season, who were two divisions above us. Obviously, that tagline got us, and we were like, okay, here we go. We've got a guy scoring goals in the Championship. He had scored 8 goals in the Championship that season, so maybe we should have looked at that a little bit harder. That first season, that season in League Two, again, I think it's fair to say was a struggle for him. I think he scored 7 goals, but I think 3 or 4 of them were penalties.
And he started just about every single game.
Yeah, he played well. Yeah, because when Simon Murray obviously signed at the same time, but Simon Murray was out for at least the first 3 or 4 months. He was the number one striker at that point, and he did struggle, unfortunately, back in League Two. It didn't start much better at the beginning of last season. I remember very vividly at the Premier Sports Cup, we were at Annan away, a lovely day, and around about this time in July. Late July, early August.
That was worse.
Wasn't that one of the first games we were allowed to actually go to as well?
So. It was for last season, it was one of those first games when it was pretty much unrestricted.
Yeah.
So there was a good group of us all down there, and there was a good few of the boys had a few drinks on them, and then obviously at Annan, when you're that close to the park, you're able to get what you want to say on, and obviously Queen's Park won a penalty in the second half and upstepped Bob McHugh. Perfectly smooth AstroTurf park, and he goes and falls over as he kicks the penalty. And I do remember
he ran straight off the pitch, he was immediately subbed off.
However, I think that was mostly to do with the unnamed fellow Queen's Park fan that I was stood beside at the time, who had to be restrained from getting on the park to get after poor Bob, because obviously having had a bit of a poor season before to start like that, it looked like it was going to be more of the same. And for the most part, under Laurie Ellis for that first half of last season, there was a few glimpses here and there of a bit better link-up play and not necessarily any more goals. But I think come January, and when Marion Bucher stepped in as manager, and then obviously when Owen Coyle came in eventually, I thought Bob McHugh was a completely different player. Like, again, okay, he didn't score as many goals again, although you have to make a special mention for that goal against Clyde at Broadway at Fir Hill. That 30-40 yard absolute pinger from out of nowhere, bent out back in to the post. Oh, it was absolutely beautiful.
The season, did it not?
I don't have that list right in front of me, but a better of, because it was an unbelievable goal. That was worth at least 3 or 4 other goals elsewhere. That goal there. He finished the season, I thought, really, really well. And obviously, as Cal mentioned before about Simon Murray, who basically played himself into a contract, I thought Bob McHugh had done just enough there. It actually turns out that he was actually considering retiring football, and he was going to go on and seek career opportunities elsewhere. He has now signed part-time at East Kilbride in the Lowland League. I think,
they've been doing that for a
good few years now, but they've always come undone against when they're coming up against the Highland League teams. That's been the problem.
Because they signed a guy straight from Hamilton this season as well.
I hope that that's where Bob McHugh gets his good few goals, part-time football, a wee bit more relaxed maybe for him. And if he ever happens to listen to this and he hears us talking about him, I would like to say right now that, Bob, I apologise for how much I was all over you after the Airdrie game, after we won promotion back at the Burnside Hotel, because I'm just really pleased that this is to claim my own back. This is one thing I will talk about. I just, given the career choice that he's apparently moving into, I just hope that he doesn't come back and, give me a citation or get me written up or get me arrested, quite frankly. So I was quite disappointed when Bob McHugh left. I know that won't be an opinion that's shared widely.
But David, you were championing McHugh all season, even when he was at his worst.
I could see the improvement to begin with, and then I just thought that he totally changed, as I say, come January, when let's just say that the whole club changed. Well, tried to change. Certainly the performances on the part, maybe the results didn't change, but the performances changed. And I could see Bobby McHugh was taking another step. I wish he'd stuck a little bit.
That's what made it frustrating, though.
I wanted McHugh to be good. Also, because having met him a couple of times,
he's a really nice guy.
He was a lovely guy. He was a lovely guy. And you just wanted him, you wanted it to work for him. And do you know what? Like, fair play to him. At the end of the day, he was here for two promotions. That's something that, you know, not many people have achieved across the years with Queen's Park. I think it would be harsh on McHugh not to mention his contribution for Murray's goal through in Dunfermline, by the way, whilst we're talking about him, because he created something out of nothing. And, you know, that's how we got into the final. And ultimately,
and that's the thing, like 12 months prior to that, like that ball would have ran straight out of the park. Or he'd have been caught by the defender or whatever. Yeah. As you say, the way that he created something out of nothing, that ball was rolling out probably for a goal kick, I think. And the way that he managed to get in front of it, get round the defender, square it to Simon Murray on a plate, brilliant. I say, obviously, he's chose to maybe move on and, okay, he's signed part-time, but he's going to move on elsewhere. I wish him all the best.
You know what? I think he could have potentially ended up showing up at Morton as well had he not decided to go part-time. I think Morton might have taken him back. But obviously, I have a feeling, I think he might have done. But anyway, he's obviously made the decision, you know, from his own career perspective. He's planning on doing something else with himself and fair play. You know, football's a short career. And
do you think he's a bit of a victim of circumstance in some elements? Because I'm not convinced. He basically spent his entire time at Queen's playing as a lone striker. And I think that's fine for someone like Murray, who plays off the shoulder of somebody, he's wanting to run about, getting that sort of approach. Whereas I don't think that was him.
No, absolutely. It definitely didn't help. Most of McHugh's best games, although Simon Murray was usually playing left wing, most of his best games were when Simon Murray was on the park, because although Simon Murray was lining up as a left winger, the way that he plays, he's absolutely everywhere. And more often than not, he was up beside McHugh. And that was where that did work a wee bit better. It's a shame that we never really fully embraced that. Obviously, we had that many good centre mids last year that we wanted to obviously have more of them on the park. Yeah. Something had to give way, and that's what happened. But yeah, I think you're right there. I think it could have just been the circumstances there. Unfortunately, maybe we didn't actually get the best out of him.
We never seen McHugh Bainham either when we were in League Two. I think one game I can remember where we've seen them together, because I remember there was a period where we were kind of calling out for it, because that was during Murray's rehabilitation phase, wasn't
it? That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
I think it's just McHugh is not, he can't be your target man. He can't be your goal scorer. He's not going to be your 12 to 15 goals a season man. And I think, you know, having him playing up front with Murray, with McHugh being the one who's, you know, holding the ball up, playing it through to him, setting things up, just like that goal through in Dunfermline, then things might have turned out a little bit better. But it was something that we didn't see too often. And all the best to him.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to now each pick a player that has been re-signed by the club. I'm going to run down the list of them first of all. And then we're, as I say, each going to pick one that, again, we want to talk a little bit more about what we hope to see or what we expect more of the same of. So in order, actually, because of course I had to go back to the website, because you remember every single player that was announced, including all of the wee apprentices contracts. I'm not going to go through every single one of them, because there was only two that ever made the bench for the team last year. All the rest, they're all players that won this under-18s league for the last 2 years in a row. The club are really big on that.
Fantastic achievement, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that they all, you know, continue their development and they come through and, well, either they contribute to Queen's Park or they get picked up by somebody else and we finally start getting money for them, because that's one of the reasons, that's probably the reason why we turned professional. So, yeah, to all those apprentices, the boys that have signed those apprentice contracts, nothing but the best for them, and fingers crossed we do see them for Queen's Park very shortly. But see, I did have to pick through about four pages on the website, because we're posting every single one as a contract signing. So, in order, Cammy Bruce, who we touched on before, Tommy Robson, Callum Ferry, Callum Bigger, Jacques Herity, Lee Kildee, Simon Murray, Charlie Fox, Louis Longridge, and Jack Thompson, who actually got the longest contract out of the lot of them, which was maybe a wee bit of a surprise, but we'll come back around to that as well.
He only signed.
He got he's actually got a 3-year extension, so he's actually signed up right until 24-25.
Oh.
Yeah. Nah.
Interesting, because he was already contracted at the end of this season anyway, I think.
Yeah, so it was until the end of 22-23, and then he got a 2-year extension on top of that, whereas everybody else was signing a, was either just expiring and signing maybe a 1 or 2 year extension. He still had a year and got an extra 2, so it's a surprise, but again, he's one of those players that I think started improving towards the end of the year, and I think he's actually started quite well this season, so fingers crossed that continues.
I mean, I remember we talked about this a little bit at the time when he signed, because I believe he was actually the first player we signed permanently under Bucher.
Yes.
And I'll be honest with you, up until that point, I don't think we'd seen too much from him to justify giving him that 18-month contract. But what I will say is that, we're talking about a guy, Bucher, here, who has made a very long and successful career of identifying and developing young players. So if he sees something in him, then, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And fingers crossed, it comes good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I say, I'm going to talk about the player that we retained first, because having spoken about Bob McHugh, and we've touched on him plenty of times already, we've got to talk about Simon Murray, because...
Gladly.
Because, again, obviously he did join us when we were in League 2, back in 2021, and he was still coming off of a serious ACL injury, which kept him out for over a year. I think it was closer to 18 months. So he still had a bit of rehab to do with Queen's Park. And when he came back, he was still, clearly getting up to pace. He still wasn't, quite fully there. And that's fine. It took a bit of time. But we were like, okay, well, that's him. He had the second half of League 2. See, when we jump up into League 1, he's going to be hitting the ground running. He's going to be all guns blazing. 30, 40 goals, no bother. Here we go. And it didn't really start like that. It was a wee bit up and down. I mean, he still scored a good few goals. But he then had that wee spell where he picked up another injury and he was out for a good few weeks. He then picked up that daft red card at Cove away. Let's be honest, kind of causes the game. And he was out there. And then he was out for another few weeks after that because I believe he had a holiday during the season. So when he came back after that, he wasn't even, maybe even particularly in favour with, I would say, some of the fans. But that second half of the season, again, a total revelation. And you mentioned it before, Callum, already, the playoffs. What he did in the playoffs alone, That's what won him his new contract this year.
Yes, that was a moment where he showed himself as a big time player, and that from what we've seen so far has carried on into this season, which is incredibly exciting. I mean, I think when we were travelling down to Stranraer, my brother was saying that this is the first full pre-season that he's had in something like 4 years.
That's right, yeah. I think Coyle himself mentioned that in an interview last week, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. And it's exciting because I think we've seen the impact that Coyle's had, virtue of the fact we won the playoffs, and I just don't think we would have done that without him there. Both, even when he comes down to his game management, it's just very impressive in comparison to what we've seen before. And I think with a full pre-season behind him, hopefully having some extra support around him in terms of Williamson. We've seen them having two up front. That seems to be sort of savoury, the service, the setup of the team, more attacking, playing those through balls, cutting through defences. If he can stay fit, touch wood, fingers crossed, four-leaf clover, whatever you need, I think he can be on for a big season.
Yeah, I think so as well. I totally agree with you. And I think what you mentioned, you mentioned him getting a full pre-season behind him. I think that's going to be massive. And you can actually see it in him. Do you know that? Because I feel as though gradually, last season, I felt as though Murray was getting bigger and bigger and he was bulking up and he was putting on a lot of muscle and his upper body was absolutely massive. And I think you can actually see that he's lost weight. I don't mean fat. Do you know? I think he's just not quite as muscly as what he was halfway through and towards the tail end of last season. And I think this is probably a byproduct of him having had injuries where he can't do much cardio. He's been doing all these, all this upper body training and stuff like that. And maybe he was a little bit too big before, but now you can see, he looks fit, he looks good, he looks sharp. And I totally agree, he's very, very exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do, hoping he can stay fit. There was a little bit of a scare the other night in the game against Forfar, where he was holding his leg briefly, but... Yeah,
you could hear the sort of the murmurs in the 200 strong crowd of us that were there, just like, oh God, please no, not again, not now.
But yeah, not, fingers crossed.
Two games into the season.
Fingers crossed, it was just a bit of cramp or something like that.
Yeah, He's got this weekend to rest, and then he's got his former team Dundee on Tuesday. We'll see what he can do against them. I say, I know we've obviously had a nice wee talk there, but let's just take a step back and look at the four playoff games against Dunfermline and against Airdrie. The first leg against Dunfermline, right, 0-0 at home, that's fine. But that second leg comes on at halftime. Within 10 minutes, has Effie Ambrose tied up in knots, taking him down as the last man, red card. Although we wanted that to swing it in our favour, it still didn't. Dunfermline were still actually doing pretty well in that game, but we kept at it. And then the aforementioned Bob McHugh creating something out of nothing. Simon Murray just having that instinct to be in the right place at the right time, which is what he can do. 89th minute to put us through into the final against Airdrie. Then that first home leg against Airdrie, the one each, he scores the goal. Then the second leg, the final, the 115th minute, Jack Thompson charging through from the midfield, plays Simon Murray through, wins one of the most ridiculously blatant penalties you'll ever see in what's essentially a cup final, buries it, and brings us through. It's three goals in those last three games to bring us up. It just had to be mentioned again. It's an incredible contribution, and I'm with Callum. I don't know how many other good luck metaphors there are. I've got none, but all of them for Simon Murray to stay fit, and he could be the difference for this season.
Not just the goals in those playoffs. You obviously mentioned the red card for Ambrose's red card through East End Park, and the penalty that he won in the last 10 minutes of extra time through an Airdrie. And I think it's interesting because you can see, Murray's a professional. He's played at a very high level before, and he knows how to. It's a little bit. Some people don't like it, but he knows how to draw those challenges. Do you know what I mean? He knows how to encourage, especially inexperienced defenders to put the foot in where they shouldn't. And he'll win his penalties this season. He'll win his free kicks, and that aspect of his game is also really important.
David Galt was a club hero for us for a good few years down in League One and League Two, doing pretty much the exact same thing. It's exactly what we want Simon Murray to be doing this year.
Simon Murray was back as well. I remember Alan
Troughton
was a pretty good diver.
Oh gosh, aye. Simon Murray was also responsible for my favourite league game last season versus Falkirk, the first one at Falkirk away.
Oh, of course,
that was phenomenal.
This is at the point before we realised that Falkirk were absolute basket cases for the season. When we thought they might actually be good, and all our fans were there with their optimism. Simon steps up, whips one round. The right
4,500 people as well, all there, all absolutely gutted. It was brilliant.
Aye, absolutely brilliant.
I think they did a goal disallowed. No, they had two goals disallowed. They missed that penalty.
Two goals disallowed for offside. Just, yeah,
brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. I would agree with you, Callum. That was my favourite game. Not including the playoffs, that was my favourite league game last season.
That was
more than
first...
a 6-0 game.
I was going to say there's a couple of Falkirk games there.
Aye, true. That is true. I have a Simon Murray question. So, I felt that he might be tailing off at the end of the season to the sort of like what could have been style player. He's had his resurgence, he's won his contract, that's amazing, and he looks like he's going in for a big one this season. Where do you think he sits in the team? So when we signed him again, and I think this is an interesting question perhaps for Williamson as well, because when we signed Murray again this season, I thought he would be coming in predominantly as a backup and we would sign a striker that we would have ahead of him. Williamson, I thought, similarly, would be further down the chain, maybe swapping in between the sort of youth setup and the first team. I think both have shown that they kind of look a bit ahead of their game right now. Granted, our opposition hasn't been too extensive in the Premier Sports Cup yet, but obviously we had the Dutch games. But it'd be interesting to see whether you think we need to sign a striker that would be on paper ahead of Murray, or if you'd be happy with him leading the way with someone else getting brought in as backup.
I would like us to. I want the squad to be as strong as possible. And I thought, to be honest with you, we were discussing this even during the playoffs, after the game through in Dunfermline. I remember we were talking about Murray and we were saying, do you re-sign him? Do you not re-sign him? This was obviously before his heroics against Airdrie, right? But, we were discussing this. And I think the general consensus was, do you know what? Murray, as an option off the bench in the Championship, probably at a reduced salary as well compared to what, obviously, we don't know the ins and outs of what these guys are getting paid, but at a reduced salary compared to what he was getting paid previously in League 2 and League 1, fine. I don't think any of us expected this resurgence, though. And, you know, he scored against Utrecht. He scored against Stranraer. He didn't score against Forfar, but it doesn't change the fact that I think he was the best player on the park that night. And he's been brilliant. And I think he's going to be, for me right now, he's one of the first names in the team sheet. And if we can bring someone in who's better than him, amazing. But, yeah,
everybody's trying to find that player. That's the problem. And well, we are now in that. Right. We are now in that same category where we are actually competing with everybody.
It's interesting. It's interesting because I think you know, you touched on the fact earlier, David, that we've not made that many signings. But if you look around, the league, there's a few clubs in a kind of similar situation. You know, Thistle have made quite a lot of signings, I believe. Morton are, from what I understand, just about finished their recruitment, even though they don't look that strong, but from what I gather, they've just about finished. You know, the squad is more or less complete.
I've seen that as well.
The Championship is a funny one because, you know, you've got full-time players who are still waiting for offers from Premier League clubs, potentially even down south, before they'll consider dropping to this level. And I think you'll see a lot of clubs doing a lot of business towards the tail end of it, even after the league games have started, you know, towards the tail end of the transfer window. It's interesting and it is difficult sometimes as well to get a guy at this level who's going to score 15 goals. I don't know, who was the top scorer in the Championship last season? Do we know?
Oh, not off the top of my head. I'd have to look up. Let's do that very quickly. I'm going to assume...
Probably someone like Kelly.
Probably Kelly or... I know that...
Or both, Brian, potentially, Brian, actually.
Brian Graham at Thistle scored quite a few goals, I'm sure. Let's see if we can find that. Oh, no, of course.
It'll be interesting to see how we play Murray this year, whether we try and stick someone up with him. Because it was pretty exciting seeing him running about with Williamson, just two guys with a lot of pace and a lot of enthusiasm, and they got goals from it.
There were only five players in the Championship last season who scored double digits.
Really?
Yep. Michael McKenna of Arbroath, Ollie Shock O'Marnock, Brian Graham, Partick Thistle, Tommy Adeloye of Ayr United, and Shane Sutherland of Inverness.
Is it not Adeloye that's been potentially linked with us? I don't know if he's signed somewhere else.
I don't think he's signed elsewhere yet, but from what I've read, you know, from what Ayr United fans are saying about him, I think he's got offers down south, and I believe they made an offer to him, but his agent was requesting big bucks, which they weren't willing to pay. I don't know what that actually means. I don't know comparatively what our budget is compared to Ayr's. I'm not sure whether he's realistically an option at this point. I don't know. But, so like I was saying there, five players scored double digits in the championship last season. Do you think Simon Murray's capable of scoring 10, 11, 12 goals?
Yes.
He is? I think he is. I don't see any reason why.
No, without question.
I think it's clear that the team's going to generate more chances this year with the way that we're setting up under
Coyle. Yeah, I agree with that.
That we're signing. There was so much of last season where we were spent... With two defensive midfielders, we were passing left to right. We weren't actually pushing forward. I think you can see with Savory already. There's just more.
That's something I was going to touch on later on. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Well, let's go on to you, Enzo. Just now, let's talk about the player that you want to talk about that signed a new contract this season.
The player that I want to talk about is a man I think all of us love, and that player is Charlie Fox. I mean, come on, the tension
for several times. I think.
Yeah, I mean, the tension and paranoia about whether he was actually going to sign a new contract for a long time was horrible. I mean, it was affecting my sleep, I think. And when he finally did, slightly disappointed that it's only a year, but I suppose, you know, Fox himself recognises that. I'm sure he had offers elsewhere. I'm sure there were other clubs interested in him, but we've got him for a year. Maybe we can tie him down for a bit longer than that, depending on how the season goes. I don't really know. Just absolutely delighted to have Fox back. He's as good a centre back as you're going to see at this level. I'm convinced he was the best. He was the best centre back in League One last season, and I would be willing to wager that he will be one of, if not the best centre-backs in the Championship this season as well. He's big, he's good in the air, he's strong, he can run with the ball, he'll chip in with the odd goal as well. And you hear him on the park, he's a leader as well. He's constantly organising the midfield, organising the rest of the defence. You can hear his London accent over the rest of the team at any game. He's constantly shouting and instructing the rest of the team in their shape and... Just absolutely buzzing to have him back, even if it is only for a year. Buzzing.
the way that he plays football, it's unlike any centre half that I've seen. Certainly in League One, obviously when he was with us last season. And honestly, in Scotland, that's obviously, I know somebody will come back and say, what are you talking about? But the way that, as you say, the way that he plays football, the fact he's 6'6", he's so therefore you just know straight away he's really good in the air, he's strong. But then when he gets the ball at his feet, and when he has a look up, and he does it at least two or three times a game, where he just goes, oh, you know what, I'm away.
And he's position players just bounce off him as he runs.
He just charges up through the midfield, and you're absolutely right. Like nobody can get anywhere near him, and he's got good feet for a big guy. You know, he's not some big lump that's playing at the back. He's a big guy. He's a footballer, and I'm disappointed that you know he did only sign a 1 year contract, but we've got to enjoy that 1 year. Who knows what will happen in the coming months, or even at the end of the season. Fingers crossed we could keep him, but see if he has another season like he did last year. We all know him. We'll just have to respect the fact that he will be on bigger and better things.
Yeah, you could quite easily see him being picked up by, I don't know, a kind of mid to lower Premier League club, you know, yeah. Hibs or Motherwell or St Mirren, something like that.
There's lots of interesting points of discussion around Charlie Fox, I think, because one, would we have kept him? I don't think we would have had we not got promoted.
No chance.
It's fair to say that would have been in the bin. I think What's almost more interesting is, how the hell is he here? Where is he? Who is he? Because it was such a bizarre signing when he came to us in the first place, because it was from Bromley. Bromley.
Yeah.
I've got his career history up here. So he was in the QPR, makes sense, London-based, etc., etc. Wickham, Basingstoke, Hampton, Walton Casuals, which is apparently a football team, Bromley, and then to us. So I have to say, fair play to whoever managed to bring that one through, because plucked out in the middle of nowhere. And I think it gives a nice segue onto who would you like beside Charlie Fox that might be from a club not on these shores.
Potentially someone with a few caps for Nigeria, for example.
Yeah, six foot six.
Just off the top of my head.
Six foot six, has a 17-minute YouTube compilation.
Yeah. One of the longest running transfer rumours in Queen's Park history. I don't know how we heard about this back in March and April, and it's still going. Big Stephen Eze. We need to work out what it is. It's Eze. We'll go with Eze.
We'll go with Eze, and I'm sure someone will correct us.
Yeah, but if you know, he was at Jamshedpur with Owen Coyle last year. Four goals from centre half again, not too bad. But yeah, as you said, Enzo, 6'6", capped for Nigeria, played at the African Cup of Nations in 2018, and Nigeria made it through the final. You know that he's a player.
He was also part of the Nigeria preliminary squad for the 2018 World Cup. Yeah. Now he never made the final 23, but even being a part of that initial setup, to you know, for us to be linked with a player who's played at that level is quite incredible.
He's still 28, so he's in his prime.
Aye, for a defender, that's pretty decent. And I think I'm all in for these types of signings. By the way, see, instead of getting your sort of Old Firm castaways or whatever you may have, I'm up for trying something a wee bit different. I'm almost surprised that we've not signed some Dutch wonder kids yet, to be fair, as well.
I can only assume that must have been part of the week in the Netherlands and the pre-season camp. Yeah, Buker would have been out speaking to all his contacts. I'm sure he's found us a couple of wee wonder kids, probably from his old club, from Alkmaar, and he'll get them out here for a year, and maybe they can lead us to. Well, no, I'm not going to say it. Maybe they can do well, and we'll see what happens. But yes, absolutely. I tell you something. If Stephen Eze came through, and the latest rumor is that it is imminent. But however, I think it's been rumoured, and then it's been maybe, and then it's been close, and it's been close, and then it's been very close, and then it's soon, and now it's nearby, and now it's imminent. So, it's baby steps, and we've still a long way to go. But see if he's here for Inverness away, the 31st of July.
Yeah.
What a signing that would be.
Yep. What day?
I would just like to, before we move on, Callum, to discuss your player, by the way, I would just like to mention, on the off chance that any football scouts happen to stumble across this podcast, everything we said about Charlie Fox was a lie. He's actually a horrible player. Don't waste your time coming to watch him. It's just, don't bother. He's rubbish. We'll just keep him forever, so you don't have to put up
5-year contract, massive buyout clause.
Forget about it.
Well said, Enzo. Good disclaimer put in there. Yep. Maybe should have put that at the start. That's fine. Cal, you go and talk about a guy that's tied down for more than a year.
Yes, I will. Liam Brown. So, I think when Liam signed for us, he was got a wee bit of history to him because he was the first player that Queen's Park ever paid money for.
Yep, that's correct.
Edinburgh City. We kind of did a wee bit of a Pogba with this one, having him in our youth setup. Then he went off to Motherwell, came back down to Edinburgh, and then we paid to get him back. So I think you can see the benefits of being pro, because potentially we wouldn't have had that many.
I need to stop you there, Callum. You've just compared Liam Brown to Paul Pogba. I'll take that.
I mean, I've compared his contractual status, maybe not the values of it. But,
yeah, Brown's clearly a better player.
Yeah, exactly.
Brown's got a better haircut as well. So exactly.
I wouldn't want to tarnish him with that. There's a few points I want to touch on with Brown. I think he's excellent. I think he has potentially been playing out of position. I'm not convinced that he is best used as a defensive midfielder. I'd be curious to see whether you think that's the same. What do you think his role will be in the team this year as well? Because we now have a lot of midfielders. We've got Jarrett signed as well, who looks pretty tidy. They're obviously a fan of Thompson, who's progressing. And does he have as big a place as we would have expected when we signed him?
I agree with you. I think his best place is as that number 10. I think that when we signed him, certainly his first sort of few months, that's where he was playing. And behind it is the number 10. He maybe hasn't got... How many goals has he scored for Queens?
Four.
In this new return, four in two years. You know, he's not maybe got the goal scoring there, but his midfield play, like... His link-up play, and again with him, when he's got the ball at his feet, he is excellent. And you always want that further up the field than you do sitting as a defensive midfielder. I can kind of see why they want him playing as a defensive midfielder, because the thought is, well, he breaks up the play and then he wins. You know, he's then got the ball and he can run with the ball. He loves twisting and turning guys inside out like there's no tomorrow. He could do it for a full 90 minutes. That would be him happy. I can see why they want him there, but I agree with you. I would like to see it a little bit further up. But Jarrett's came in. Jarrett looks good. I think he could have that spot nailed down already.
This is where you get into a funny sort of position, isn't it? You're almost spoilt for choice, because it does feel like in the middle of the park, depending on what we're doing, we're going to end up with a lot of depth, which I think was what he was maybe struggling with last year, because we're having Connell, Smith, these guys kicking about as well.
It was the exact same position with Connell last year. Everybody was crying out for him to go further up and he just kept getting pushed back. Yeah. They just wanted to have all the best players on the park, and unfortunately, I mean, somebody was playing out of position. That seems to be a little bit of a theme of us over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know what Brown's best position is, to be completely honest with you. I don't know. I agree that he's better in a slightly more advanced role. I don't think he is a kind of a deep sitting midfielder, but do we have that place for him in a more advanced role with the players that we've brought in? I don't know. So we'll just have to see how Coyle manages to work him into this lineup, because I like Brown as well. I think he has a lot of potential. I think he's shown in the past that he was excellent. I remember the very first game that he played for us, I think it was when we played against Motherwell at Fir Hill in the Premier Sports Cup last season. And he was brilliant that night. And I don't know if maybe a bit of that was him trying to get revenge on a club that released him and told him that he wasn't good enough. I don't know, but I'm really, really excited to see what Coyle does with him and how he does fit into the squad, because there's a place for him, if you ask me. I think there is a place for him.
He had games out in the right last season quite often as well, which felt odd.
I didn't like that.
No, me neither.
No.
We had enough wingers last year that we didn't need to be playing him out
too
the
many
right.
Wingers. It's just that a lot of them were on loan and not very good.
He's only 23 as well, by the way, so like, see, you're thinking about this whole approach that they're going for with the proper coaching, this different style of football. I mean, they will have a pretty defined role in their head of how they want him to develop, and he's still got plenty of time to do that. So hopefully, given the length of contract that he's on,
He was on a he signed on a three-year deal, didn't he? So he still got two of that left.
That was in June last year. So 2 years, plenty of time.
So there's plenty of opportunity for him to show what he can do and for him to develop potentially into, you know, maybe there's another position that fits him naturally that we've just not discovered yet. Who knows? That you know, that sometimes happens throughout a player's career. So we'll see. But I agree with you, Callum. He's a great player.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. But let's talk then, Enzo. Let's move on to look at the players coming in to the
club.
New
signings.
Yes, so let me just very quickly list off who has came in so far as of where we're at right now. So we have Scott Williamson, who came in, he actually signed in January 2022, but he went back out on loan to Cambuslang Rangers in the West of Scotland B Division, which I do believe is the seventh tier of Scottish football.
That's right, although it's maybe worth highlighting that Cambuslang Rangers got promoted.
Yeah, they did,
large part thanks to his 50-odd goals.
Yes, because the man appears to be an absolute goal machine. I mean, you can maybe comment on the quality of player that he may have been up against, but at the end of the day, he's got to have a little bit about him to hit the back of the net 50 times. You've still got to do a little bit of work yourself there. So, he came in January, but as I say, went back out on loan. He's now back with the team this summer and has been
part of pre-season.
He's a new signing. I'll be calling him a new signing because I'll talk about him a little bit more very shortly. So we also have, we've also announced Dom Thomas, who came in, he signed a 2-year contract coming in from Dunfermline. Obviously, we had mentioned before, for those that may be listening and aren't aware, when we played Dunfermline in the Championship playoffs, in the semi-finals, the Dunfermline fans were actually a little bit upset that Dom Thomas didn't appear in that first leg against us. They weren't quite sure what happened, but they went, okay, fine, he's not there, whatever. That game finished 0-0. And then they realised, hang on a minute, he's not been named in the lineup for the home leg, for the second leg either. So they kind of started getting a little bit angry at that. And it turns out that we'd actually been talking to him prior to that game, and he'd already agreed to come to Queen's Park. So obviously, John Hughes, the Dunfermline manager, learned of this and went, well, you're not playing against them. And it just so happened he was our best player. So thank you to the people behind the scenes at Queen's Park. Thank you to John Hughes. Thank you to Dom Thomas for all of those steps and quite frankly, helping us into the promotion, into the Championship. He had some good... he had a good sort of goal return last season, I think, out in the wing. I don't have the number in front of me right now, but he scored a good few goals.
I've got a friend who's a big Dunfermline fan, and he spoke very highly of Thomas. He said he was the most consistent and probably the best player last season. Now, obviously, I don't think that's saying much because Dunfermline were absolutely stinking across the whole season. They had two awful managers, and it culminated in an embarrassing relegation. But you know, he's clearly a championship caliber player, and he was an exciting first signing to bring in. I say first signing, obviously Williamson was before that. It was an exciting first signing because it showed you the level of player that we were targeting and the sort of guys that we were trying to bring in. And I think, you know, Thomas will do well for us.
I think what's exciting about Thomas as well is, and we've not really talked about him much, I'm sure we will in future episodes, but like the way that Robson's been playing in the latter half of last season and the start of this season, see having those two up the left-hand side, I think it could work really, really well because Robson's just been excellent and hopefully they start to get a bit of a sort of connection and can push us forward a wee bit because there's loads of potential there.
Yeah, there absolutely is. So we've also got three more new signings to the club. Grant Savory joined from Peterhead. Now, Liam Brown, we paid a fee for him. I don't know if there was a fee for Jack Thompson. Obviously, he was on loan originally with us. There may well have been a fee there.
I believe his contract was released.
Well, then in that case, Grant Savory's the second player that Queen's Park have paid a fee for because he was under contract for another year at Peterhead and he's joined us this year. So he's the second player we paid a fee for. Personally, I don't particularly recall him against us last year, but looking at the stats, he had 28 games for Peterhead, 6 goals and 5 assists, which is not bad. But we'll come on to talk about the games that he's played for us so far. He looks like an absolute gem.
Yeah, yes. So that's the player I'm going to be talking about. So should we just dive straight into that then?
Well, let me just name the other two that we've got here then. Right. So we've got, we've also signed Patrick Jarrett, who's another midfielder. He came up, or he's coming up from Stoke, from their youth system. He never made any senior appearances for the first team, but he did play for the under-18s and under-23s. He's signed on a two-year contract. And we've also signed a defender, Jason Naismith, who's signed on a one-year contract after leaving Kilmarnock last season. He played 16 games for Kilmarnock in the Championship last year. So, Enzo, we'll come back to you. You want to talk a little bit more about this potential wonder kid, Grant Savory?
Yeah, Grant Savory. I'll be honest with you, David. Much like yourself, I was, I don't want to say underwhelmed, but I wasn't massively excited about Savory signing when that was announced. And it was mostly because, I don't really remember him playing against us, if I'm being honest with you, against Peterhead. But I think that's just because the games against Peterhead were all rubbish. And I don't really remember much about them in general.
We tend to lose against them every time we play them.
Yeah, our record against Peterhead has never been good, has it? Just going back as long as I can remember, anyway. But yeah, Grant Savory, I believe he's just turned 22 years old. Came through at Celtic's youth system. Was at Peterhead last season, and we've now signed him for an undisclosed fee, according to the article on the website. I don't know what that is. I'd be very curious to know more about that, but I suspect we'll never find out. So, yeah, he looks great, doesn't he? I mean, he looks like a very strong option, a very strong attacking option. And I think he's the kind of player that we've actually sort of lacked over the past couple of years. I don't know what you think about that, because we've lacked someone to get into the kind of tight spaces and link up midfield and attack. You know, it does a lot of work down about the edge of the box. He's quick as well, and he's clearly capable of scoring himself. He scored two down at Stranraer, set two of Murray's goals up.
He scored a good goal against Utrecht as well.
And he did, two assists in that game as well.
I don't think he quite pulled it off against Forfar. I think he was a little more anonymous in that game, but I'm not worried about that. I think Savory looks like a brilliant option for us, and I think he seems to link up really well with Murray, which is great. And excited to see more of him.
What do we know how long he's signed for? I can't remember what it was.
I believe it's a two-year contract. Two-year contract.
June 2023 expires.
It's another one who's really young as well, isn't it? Which is particularly exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's clearly, for the most part of these signings, it is a clear aim from the club that they're looking for younger players with the potential to improve massively and to either help us move up or to sell on. That's clearly where we're going to be. We're going to be like most other clubs in Scotland now. We're going to be a developing and selling club.
Yeah, and like you say, you know, either they can hopefully do both of those things, you know, contribute towards success at Queen's Park.
Absolutely.
and then also make a tidy profit, and that will help sustain the sort of model that clearly Dempster and Bucher are trying to build at the club, and that's what we all want to see over the next few years.
It certainly is. So, Callum, let's go into your player that you want to talk about that's came in. Now, we're talking about maybe young players that's the aim of the game. This one maybe not necessarily there, but still got a good few years on him.
God, you're making us feel bad for saying that he's no younger. He's 28. He's younger than us, exactly.
No,
we've all went over that 30 hill now.
We are well off the hill, yes.
Yes. Jason Naismith, so brought up in St Mirren youth, spells with Morton and Cowdenbeath before getting a full-time spell at St Mirren between 2013 and 17. And then since that period, he's kind of been at a different club each year. So he's kind of dotted about from 2017 onwards, but it's always been at a really good standard. So Kilmarnock last season, obviously they had a very, very good year. So when we signed him, I have to say, very excited, and I still am. I'd say so far we haven't seen too much of him. And this is the reason that I wanted to talk about him, because I think there's an interesting question around how we're going to shape up this year, because Davidson seems to have came into the fold. Now, we seen Davidson play it right back once, I think, last season against Falkirk in the 6-0, where he just looked unbelievable, as did everyone else in that game. And I think there was potential shouts for him to maybe have a wee bit more of an opportunity in that position. And he seems to have got that in some of the pre-season games, and I think he's looked really, really good. But it'll be interesting. I don't know what your thoughts are in the sort of Davidson piece and what you expect from Naismith, because I think it's fair to say that Obviously, the right-back position last season was taken up by Doyle, who's a great leader, had a good period at Queen's. And there was some surprise, I think, the fact that he didn't get kept on. But I think the main element that we all kind of noticed was going forward, there wasn't that sort of end product, which you maybe expect or need in the sort of modern style of football that we're moving towards. And I think that's what Naismith is meant to be in terms of that attacking force.
Yeah, Doyle was, for me, I think, probably the most borderline player in terms of those that we released. I think it would have been a difficult one. I think Coyle, Buker, whoever made the decision, would have probably had to think long and hard about it, because I still think, even in this squad, Doyle would be an option off the bench, and I think he seems like the kind of guy that would be good to have in training, good for morale. Maybe he himself didn't want to be a backup. Obviously, we don't know the ins and outs of that. Naismith is an interesting signing to me. I know that he wasn't particularly well-liked at Kilmarnock. I understand that he has had an injury at some point over the past couple of years, and that has resulted in him losing a bit of his pace. And I think we did see that in the Utrecht game. He looked quite slow. He looked slow at turning. He just looked slow in general. And for a big guy, he didn't look to be great in the air either. But I'm not too worried about that, because, you know, if he's big enough, he doesn't have to be good in the air, doesn't have to jump. If he's to be sitting back and you know, more of a defensive right back, I don't know what the expectation for him is. I'm not really sure. But he's a big name. He's played at a high level, and I think he's another one that should be a good signing on paper.
With Jason Naismith, I mean, I noticed there was a line from Bukersey on the club website where it was announced, obviously, where he's signing his one-year contract. The quote from Marion Bukersey says, "Last season, his involvement in creating threat was one of the highest of all backs in the Championship."
Yeah.
So clearly the thought is he is attacking and, you know,
moneyballing this.
That is very interesting.
It's clearly one of these stats websites that it's collating, you know, the expected goals and all. You know, it's like Mary Booker's playing Football Manager here, and he's got all the stats, and he's seen what's going on here. Clearly, I think that's one thing. Now, I agree with what was said, Doyle. I quite like Michael Doyle. I was disappointed that he was not kept on as well. But the one thing that I think we can all agree about Michael Doyle is when it came to his crossing, his passing, it was a bit wild at the best of times.
Doyle was defensively sound.
Defensively sound, pretty good with the ball at his feet. Crossing, dear me, it was
good with the ball at his feet, right? But at the same time, he quite often just ran in a straight line. Do you know what I mean? And like you say, the final product, putting the ball in the box, was... it was very frustrating at times, because he would get into good positions and then he just couldn't put the ball where it needed to be.
So I think it's clearly something that has been recognised there. And maybe, as Callum said, we've not really seen a lot of Naismith. He's came off the bench in these two cup games. Yeah. Obviously, Davidson's getting a wee run right now. Obviously, that could be partly because we've came up against two League Two teams. Maybe when we come up against the two Championship teams as we go, and obviously then into the actual league, it could well be that Naismith will be the starting right back. But yeah, we've yet to see that right now. I would like to see Naismith and see what he can do. I want to see this attacking threat that he can bring. But for now, we're just going to have to wait and see.
I wonder if some of the context around Doyle was the sort of versatility of Davidson. So if they'd kind of made their mind up that Doyle wasn't going to be the starting right back this season, they were bringing Naismith in. Because I know we mentioned it would have been good to still sort of keep him within the club. Davidson, he's played quite a few games sort of in that defensive midfield position, and he fits in a wee bit better as a squad player, I think.
Utility player, they call them, don't they?
There's
a bit more flexibility, I know. A bit more flexibility. If you need to drop him into the midfield, you can do.
And he's got Johnny's side.
Yeah. No, listen, you're right. I was impressed with Davidson last season, that one game he did play right back. The only problem is, you know, we realised quite quickly afterwards that it was difficult to take anything from Hearts in that Falkirk side 6-0, because they were horrific. Aside from great joy,
because he got sacked after that game, didn't he?
He certainly did.
He did, yeah, he did.
Queen's Park ending careers.
Oh, there we are. And then I'll talk about the last player, about talking about players coming in. I'm going to talk about Scott Williamson and say, although he did sign in January 22, he is actually with Queen's Park now. So he's basically a new signing. I'll keep it very short because we haven't, again, seen an awful lot of him. See, he's had a wee bit of a run out in the pre-season games. But he's came off the bench against Renard on Saturday there. He got involved in the game a little bit there. But he got his goal against Forfar just a couple of nights ago on Tuesday night. And it was a great goal when you look back at it. Liam Brown playing the ball up. A great flick on from Simon Murray. And Williamson, I don't know much about the centre-half that he was up against, I will say that. But the turn of pace that he had, because he started a good 3 or 4 or 5 yards behind him, and he got all the way around the outside of him, dinked it over the keeper as the keeper came sliding out and left himself a nice empty net to toe-poke it in. Talking about, you know, okay, he was maybe in the seventh tier before, but he's clearly got something there. He's clearly got that instinct there, and it was really good to see him get a good run out on Tuesday and to get a goal. I hope that there's something there, and I hope there's something that can actually really contribute this season.
I can't pretend I'm not a wee bit excited. Because somebody that has that goal-scoring instinct, see if he can make the step up with the pace that he's got, the age that he is. There's just so much potential there, and it's the type of player that, from what I've seen so far, who's fun to watch. Like, I think you appreciate high-energy players that can actually do stuff on the ball, like sort of Simon Murray and what we're seeing there. So yeah, fingers crossed he gets a good opportunity. I think it's interesting, like, see when I don't know if you read the article when Bucher was talking about the young spiders, all the different classifications of the youth groups that we've got now. Yeah. And he's actually classified as one of those ones that's meant to be in between the first team and the sort of youth guys. And I'll be interested to see whether that actually stays the same once we've signed the rest of our team, because he looks like he's going to be useful.
Yeah, no, he definitely looks like he could definitely contribute this season, I think.
And you're right in saying, Callum, that he just looks to be, he's just a fun player to watch it. And I think a big part of that is because he himself clearly has fun when playing. And I think that's just, it's, you know, you saw how excited he was to get that goal against Forfar the other night. And I think we were all excited for him. You know, the buzz from the 200 strong crowd when he nipped past the defender and then nipped past the keeper, and you knew that he was going to get that first goal, was, you know, it was, people were excited for him, we were all happy for him. And I just hope, you know, David, you touched on the goal scoring instinct. That's something I think that you can take with you to a higher level. As long as you get the fitness, as long as you're a capable player, then that goal scoring instinct isn't going anywhere, even if you do jump up a couple of divisions.
You're absolutely right. It's just the hope that you can adapt. It'll obviously be a lot more physical and everything. All the other cliche, the football cliches.
Better goalkeepers, which is exactly factor.
Exactly. But if you can adapt to that, there's no reason, as you say, that goal scoring instinct that will never leave. And let's just hope that he can, whether it's in between the youth team or actually in as part of the first team. Let's hope that he's getting plenty of football and he definitely kicks on.
And I think it's a 3-year contract. Three and a half year it was initially. Yeah. So 3 years now. So if he does come good again, like as we talked about a few times now, the potential value in that is massive.
I think what's quite good and it might benefit us going forward is seeing a lot of these young guys who aren't fully fledged in that their sort of prime potential yet. They're being given long contracts, and that's going to build a lot of trust in players coming to the club, you'd imagine, knowing that the club are willing to give them the time to develop and sort of fall into the systems that we're wanting, rather than just expect them to come in, do good one season, because it's that proper short-termism that you see so often.
Yeah, definitely. Well, fingers crossed for all of them. Let's hope that all the players that have been retained and the new signings in all kick on and do well for us this year, and best of luck to all those that have left. Apart from those that are into other championship teams, when we're up against them, I hope they're busy. Maybe they'll be away getting their hair done or something that day, who knows. Not a particular dig at any particular player. We're going to move on to have a little look at the pre-season results and move into the games of the first two games of the Premier Sports Cup. So we had our pre-season camp where the players that were in with the team already, and it turned out it was actually everybody that we've spoken about, including the apprentice players, went out for a week to Arnhem, was it? Just near the sort of Netherlands and German border, I believe it was.
Yeah, I think so.
for a week in a nice fancy looking camp there, and we got a couple of games against Lokomotiv Zagreb from Croatia and Utrecht of the Netherlands, who play in the Eredivisie in the top division there. So we can't really say too much about the Zagreb game. That wasn't streamed. We saw some highlights.
The Zagreb game was like a training exercise, and that was pretty evident even before it kicked off, because it was played as three periods of 40 minutes. It was
some exercise.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. It's apparently a roasting hot date as well out there. So that was just about, you know, getting back in the game, I think.
Oh yeah, with that game, it looked like every single one of the 30-man squad was involved in that game for a good period of time. So that definitely looked like it was a fitness exercise and everything than anything else. But I mean, we still gave a good account of ourselves. I mean, we lost 3-1 to them, but they're a good team. I think they finished second in the Croatian League last year, and that means they're in European competition this year.
I believe that was the division before last season. So last season they just missed out on Europe.
Oh, did they just miss out? All right.
I think so. Yeah, that's my understanding of it. But the season before, they finished second in the Croatian League, and they also got to the cup final, which they unfortunately lost. But they're no mugs. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's a good side. And, you know, talking about the fact that they're a decent side, Williamson did get a goal. Now, I don't know how strong the squad. I don't know how strong the squad was. I don't know how experienced the goalkeeper was that was playing when Williamson got his goal, because I'm sure they made a lot of changes over the course of the game as well. It would have been just as much about fitness for them as it was about us. But, again, you know, for a guy who was playing for Cambuslang Rangers last year to then score against a top-tier Croatian team, shows you that he's got it in him.
It definitely does. Then we move on to the Utrecht game, where that grabbed the headlines. Unfortunately, not so much for our result, but because of the sort of well-known face to Scottish football that was in goals to begin with Utrecht, the former Celtic goalkeeper, Barkas. Despite his best efforts, and you know, he actually had a couple of saves to make in the first half, he was subbed off at half-time, and we went on to win that game 4-2. Now, that game was streamed. We all had a chance to watch that. Their lineup looked... it was a mix of half of their sort of first team and half of... Not necessarily their young team, because their young team actually had another friendly there, the same day, so it was actually more sort of reserves and sort of really sort of fringe players. But They had a really strong team there, and we looked really, really good against them that day.
It was a bit surreal, actually, because you're kind of waiting for the sort of collapse, and it almost came at one point, but we just kept pushing, and it was a wee bit of the Simon Murray show for a period of time as well, because he was just over absolutely everything. He was very much falling into that sort of big player, big moment type scenario again, which was good to see. And I think after it, or before it, I think you sent us a tweet, Enzo, that Utrecht had put out, where they'd put out their last four results against Scottish teams, and it was like, beat Ross County, beat Celtic, beat whoever else, and now it's like, I know it's just a pre-season friendly, right? Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but I think it was fun.
I think those games were all friendlies as well. I don't think they've played against Scott. Maybe I misunderstood it. I don't believe Celtic. They've played against...
Maybe Celtic in Europe somewhere.
Celtic in a European qualifier at some point over the years. But yeah, it's fun to ruin it, even if it doesn't mean much, does it? But it's nice to ruin that for them.
Absolutely. But even if you say, Calum, even though it was a pre-season game, like the goals that we scored, we've then gone on and scored pretty similar goals in these first two Premier Sports, the Cup games as well. It clearly showed that we went and played the way that we're expecting to play this season. And we took the game to them. Yes, you're right, we did nearly have that collapse. We went 2-1 up, and from kickoff, they went straight up the park and scored. I think we're going to say that sentence a couple more times before we're finished here.
Did that a lot last season as well.
We certainly did. But we set out the way that we're going to play this season, and we took the game to a really good side from a really good league.
Yeah.
Simon Murray scored two. Grant Savory scored a lovely goal from the edge of the box. And then Patrick Jarrett was even further out. I think he was about 25 yards out. He was still known as Trialist at that point.
Because we didn't actually know who he was.
Yeah.
We didn't actually say until the morning of the Stranraer game. We were all wondering whether he was going to be involved in that, because, you know, there must have been some expectation that he was going to sign, having been taken all the way out to Holland with the squad and stuff like that. It's strange that it took them so long to announce it, but I'm glad he has signed.
Absolutely. And then the last pre-season game, we'll just touch on it very, very quickly because it was a 0-0 against Alloa. It really was a rough game all round. I don't think either team played particularly well. It was very much a come down after the Utrecht game to go and watch that, the game against Alloa. The only point of note was the aforementioned Willie Muir was playing as a trialist for Alloa in goals, and he took a heavy, heavy hit from Charlie Fox at a corner. Charlie Fox was left unmarked at the set piece, obviously went charging in for the ball. Willie Muir came out to get the ball, and the two of them collided, and Willie Muir came off second best, unfortunately. It was reported that he was unconscious for a while, but he regained consciousness before he was taken to hospital for a preliminary check, and he's now signed for Alloa, so fingers crossed he has fully recovered from that injury, and fingers crossed for him, all the best for his upcoming season.
I was delighted to see that it didn't scupper his chances of getting a contract there. Wish him all the best. I know we talked a bit about Willie earlier on, but fingers crossed that he shows them what he can do and he has a great season there.
Yep, absolutely. So let's move on to our last topic of conversation for this evening, the two games in the Premier Sports Cup. So we started the season with a lovely wee away trip in the sun to Stranraer. A 5-2 victory, Simon Murray hat-trick, Simon Murray first half hat-trick, I should say, and two goals from Grant Savory as well. I think the two goals that we conceded were pretty poor, but I'll come to you first, Enzo. Yep. Your opinions on the game?
I would rather win 5-2 than win 3-0. Right, I'm on board with this all out attack. I do want the defence to tighten up a little bit, and I think it will, especially if we bring in a new centre back. I think that probably is one of Coyle's priorities at this point in time. But it was an exciting game. It was great to see us play that way, scoring for fun. I mean, when was the last time? When was the last time that we were scoring for fun like this? I can't remember it.
It was five going on 15.
It absolutely was. And if you watch the highlights...
The Stranraer goalkeeper had a couple of good saves, especially in the first... I mean, first half, it finished 4-2. It could have been 8-2, and I really don't think there could have been any complaints.
And for me, despite Murray's hat-trick, Savory was man of the match with his two goals and being involved in two others. I thought he was absolutely brilliant that day. I thought he was fantastic. It was a really enjoyable game, really enjoyable day out. And, more of the same soon, hopefully.
You really enjoyed your day out, didn't you?
I think we all did.
A particularly good picture of you looking like you enjoyed that way home.
I was just sleeping.
Were your eyes open, were you?
Aye, because you kind of get comfy on a bus.
Well, I'll post it on Twitter and we'll see. We can
let everybody decide. I've got a picture of Callum sleeping as well, by the way. I found it on my phone earlier on today.
I wasn't in a good way.
You fell asleep. And you were using my knee as a pillow, so...
your day out in the pub took it out of you.
I know, it was brilliant.
Heat stroke.
Aye, definitely was.
It didn't help that they opened... The thing is, right, when you go to the football, obviously, this is a separate debate, you know, should they be allowed to serve alcohol in grounds? I think they should, but obviously that's a totally separate conversation. But you go to the football and you've got that period of time to kind of sober up in between all your pre-match pints and then having another couple after the game. But then it's Stranraer. They ruined the that altogether by inviting us into a wee magic room that was full of cans of lager. So there was no...
What else? What are you meant to do? You've got to go and have one. That's exactly it. Oh, there we are. So it was a great day out there. We will come on and I'll let you talk about the next game, Callum, the 4-1 against Forfar, but we do have to firstly touch on quite a large elephant in the room at the function rooms at Ockleview, because Lesser Hampden is still not ready after 2 years now of planning, multiple builders, arbitration, delays, COVID being cited, building supplies being cited, the whole lot, any excuse you can think of has been cited. We are now starting this season through an Ockleview, which is 25 miles up the road from Hampden, I believe. And that's maybe just as the crow flies. When it comes to Ockleview, the question I'm going to put to you is, could there have been a worse stadium to choose as Queen's Park's home ground this season?
I tried to think of the positives from it. And after going there the other day, arrived back with none of them. I thought it was just poor all round. And I think I feel like this is something that we should touch on in a bit more depth in another episode. So I'm not going to go
into I agree with that. The Lesser Hamden debate is a separate conversation for another time.
But the only point that I want to make right now is a club have to do better in how they're treating the fans. Only season ticket members could get on the bus to go to Ockleview for a game that you can't access unless you've got that transport available. There are no trains available to us right now. The bus had spaces on it, and we know of several people who wanted to go to that game who were not able to because of the insane policies that the club are putting out. Hopefully they will review it and realise how silly it is, and divisive it is between people who might not be able to get season tickets for whatever reason, and fix it in time for ideally the games this week or at a bare minimum for the start of the league season, because I think everyone's been very, very patient about the club over the last few years, and it should be paid back to the fans.
Yeah, they're sort of getting away with it a little bit because the product on the pitch is so exciting at the minute.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I think that Simon Murray's definitely bailed them out quite a lot by winning the promotion, big goals in the promotion playoffs. We will talk. Oh, sorry, Andy Gwenzo.
No, I was just going to mention, listen, right, I actually don't think Ockleview itself is a bad ground. I think it's fine.
That's true. It's a point to point out that this isn't against any Stenhousemuir fans if they have to find their way onto here as well. It's nothing against Stenhousemuir themselves. They've obviously allowed us the use of the ground, and for
that, exactly,
we have to thank them for that, because at the end of the day, where else would we go? Like, literally, who knows where we would have ended up? It's nothing against Stenhousemuir themselves. This is purely the fact of Queen's Park are Glasgow, the south side of Glasgow, at most a Glasgow club, to be going 25, 30 miles away is bad enough. It's then on the club to provide the transport for the fans. That is our problem. That is our gripe there. It's nothing to do with that. Sorry, continuing.
No, it's all right. Don't worry. I was just going to say Ockleview itself is fine. I just think it's a bit of a shame that there's that big terrace behind the goal, and they can. I recognise that there's a wall in between the section where the stand is and the terrace itself, but I think it would be brilliant if they could find a way to partition that off and maybe give us a quarter of it, a third of it, and put the away fans on the other side of it. I know that would likely have an impact on cost in terms of policing, stewarding, whatever, but I think it's a shame because that little stand only holds 600, and the crowd was poor the other night, but if the club can get their act together, make it easier for fans to get through to Stenhousemuir, you know, if we're playing well towards the end of the season, is it that unrealistic that even through in Stenhousemuir, we could attract 600 home fans? I don't think it is. I think we could easily fill that.
Well, I mean, 600 home fans has been the sort of staple in Glasgow. With us being in the Championship now, and yes, if the football is good, and if, you know, touch wood again, all that kind of stuff, if we're up the top half of the table and we're actually fighting for something there, by all means, we should be easily getting 600. We should potentially be at the point where we're actually having to ask for a bit of the terracing or something like that. Obviously, there's going to be some clubs that are going to bring big away supports to Ockleview. And obviously, we keep talking Ockleview. As it stands, I think the club's saying October or November or something like that. They're hoping to be back at Lesser. We're going to talk at Ockleview as if we're going to be there all season. Let's just go with that.
Are they saying that? I've not seen that.
Well, I don't think it's been maybe said as such. I think it's a couple of wee sort of rumblings, a couple of wee rumours. But certainly, I've seen something today that a friend of a friend of a friend knows somebody at Queen's or something like that, and they're talking about November. As I say, you've got to take it with the tiniest pinch of salt. I'm personally looking at it as it's going to be Ockleview this season. And resigning to that fact. If we can do whatever we can, as Angel says, and as you say as well, Cal, we can do whatever we can. The club have to get it sorted to make it as easy as possible for as many fans as want to travel to Ockleview to get there. If that means that they need to put on 5, 6, 7 buses every second week, they pay for it and they're there for people to use, whether they like it or not. That has to be available to the fans.
I agree.
Yeah, they just have to do that financial hit.
Yeah, they absolutely do. It's not like we're not short cash these days. So let's talk about the game that was at Ockleview. We'll not talk about the crowd, we'll talk about the game. Callum, what did you make of that game? A 4-1 win against Forfar at home. Lee Kilday with a double. Scott Williamson, as we've already mentioned, with his first goal for the club. And maybe the most surprising goal scorer of all, Lewis Moore.
What a goal it was as well.
It was
a bit of an odd game. It was poor, I think, for large periods of it. There wasn't that much to shout home about, and then we just kind of got we always looked comfortable, but we just kind of got ourselves ahead of the game a wee bit, and obviously the double from Kilday. I don't know how many goals he scored for us in his entire career, but 2-1 game is pretty good. But the most exciting goals were definitely from the subs. So we had Williamson come on, obviously scored that fantastic goal, pace, had the composure to chip it over the keeper and then just pass it into the net. And Moore with just an absolute net buster. I mean, what more can you ask for? And the bit that was nice with Moore, and I know that Coyle said this in his interview after the game, was that he made the corner that he ended up scoring from through being direct and running at a guy. It wasn't just him getting a lucky chance, if you know what I mean. He made that opportunity. It was nice to see another batch of goals, 4 goals again. And you can't really... You just got to be looking forward to Dundee now. It feels like we're ready for a proper good test.
Yeah, definitely. It's been good, as you say, 4 goals against Forfar, 9 goals in 2 games, 4 goals against Utrecht as well. We are scoring goals. There is definitely still this concern, and we've mentioned it a number of times. There's still definitely this concern at the back. We're a bit lax. I mean, see, I said the sentence against Renoir. It has to be said, the kick-off of the second half, Forfar, straight out of the park, won a free kick, which maybe debate the foul when you watch back the highlights. Maybe it was a daft one to give away. The defender was really poor for it. I mean, Craig Slater.
Yeah, it was.
Craig Slater put the ball right on top, right in the 6-yard box. Everybody was lined up the 6-yard box. And it was allowed, you can't really quite tell who it bounces off of on the highlights, but it bounces back to the sort of front post from where the ball came from. And there was the Forfar substitute, actually, who came on at halftime. So it was his first touch of the ball as well, banging it into an empty net. It was poor there.
I think that's what we've kind of suffered with last season, though, isn't it? It was those big crosses into the box and it just not getting dealt with properly. And I think it was noticeable this season so far that the Ferry doesn't... I don't know if that's an instruction, but he's not been coming off his line very much at all. And he's been relying on the defence, and they've not sort of cleared it properly often enough, I don't think. Feels vulnerable.
Yeah. Certainly does. Well, hopefully that's something we can work on. And again, more signings maybe come in. There could be another change at the back four. Who knows what's going to happen there. Fingers crossed we can get those problems solved, because it is going to be a lot tougher against Dundee on Tuesday and then Hamilton next Saturday. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed we can get to both those games. Are both of you season ticket holders? Yes. You'll be on the buses. You'll be on the bus to Ockleview, yes. I'll be on the train at Hamilton next Saturday. And hopefully another couple of good games. What would you think you'd expect out of these two games? Enzo, you first.
Well, I just think it's a slightly better benchmark of where we are. I think with this cup, even against teams in your division, there's no real guarantee that it's going to give you an accurate representation of where things stand before the season starts, because there's still time for teams to make signings. There's still time for a lot. A lot can happen between even now and in the first league game up in Inverness. A lot can happen. But it'll be a real test. Both games will be a real test. I'm particularly looking forward to seeing us against Dundee, though, with them being favourites for the league title in every single bookie available. I don't think Hamilton look great, to be honest with you. The club seems to be in a bit of disarray at the minute, but Dundee, tidy unit, some good players, an experienced manager. I'm excited for that game. I'm really looking forward to it.
What do you think then, Kyle? Do you think 3 points will be enough to see us through into the next round?
Realistically.
Yeah, I think it would, but I don't think we're going to get them against Dundee. I think we might get pushed out right now just on the basis that I think we've still got a few signings to make that would bolster our squad and maybe help us compete a wee bit better. But what I'm hoping for is a sort of decent performance, and then against Hamilton I'd like to see us take some points off of them, because I feel like, and as you said, Enzo, it's that sort of benchmarking right now, and I feel like that's a team that we're going to be in and around at some point of the season, so hopefully we can do well.
All right. Right, well, I think that will do us for this first attempt at the Spiders Talk podcast. Thank you very much, both of you, for guiding us along through this, and we'll be back. I think we'll be back next week. We'll maybe do a recap of the two games. We might even do a wee preview, a closer preview, and see what happens there. Yep. We'll see how it all goes.
Should we sign off then with our predictions for Tuesday night then? How do you think the game's going to end?
I'm going to go. With Dundee as well. That's the thing with them being obviously coming down. Obviously, they're still going to be strong despite what they've gone through last season. I'll be honest, I've not really kept an eye on their signings and things like that, but you've still got to expect them to be the best team in the Championship this year. I would take a wee 1-1, and then Queens on the penalties. So the wee bonus point in penalties. Am I being too optimistic there, do you think?
No, I was going to say 3-1 Queens.
There you go. I'd be realistic then.
I fancy us to go for it, and I think we'll get the one. I think we'll catch them off guard.
You think the gung-ho coil ball is going
to
get us through? Okay.
I'm going to go after me saying that I think we'll probably lose to Dundee. It doesn't mean that I'm going to predict us to lose. So I'm going to go for 2-1 Queens in one of those sort of bizarre games where we've had two chances and scored them immediately. That's what I'm going for.
I would take that.
Love it. Excellent. I would take that in a heartbeat as well. Well, guys, listen, thank you very much for that. Thank you for listening, if you're listening to the podcast right now, and for putting up with us for a lot longer than we actually expected to be talking about this. But if you enjoyed that,
we'll keep it shorter next time.
Gold star if you made it this far.
Yeah, exactly.
We will be coming back with some more opinions throughout the season. We think we're going to make this a regular occurrence. So we will be on Twitter at Spiders Talk Pod. You can also find spiderstalk.com, which is a Queen's Park fans forum. We will also be posting there. So we will be linking the podcast there. And we'll probably give a shout out on Pie and Bovril as well. Why not? Pie and Bovril's there. Let's use it. Exactly. Exactly. So listen, Callum, Enzo, thank you very much. And thank you, you guys, for listening there. And
thanks for listening, guys.
We will see you again soon.
See you next week.
Bye.
You need to press stop recording on the thing, do you not?